Are you an early stage founder revolutionizing the future of retail? Then you're in the right place. My name is Sapna Shah, and I'm an angel investor investing at the pre-seed and seed stage in retail tech, e-commerce, marketplaces, and consumer. I'm also the founder of RetailX Series, an ecosystem to help early stage founders in the retail and consumer sectors. RetailX Series includes events, a YouTube channel, a Slack community, resources for founders, and this podcast. In this podcast, I interview founders, investors, and experts in the retail space, and we dig deep into the tactics around key topics that early stage founders want to hear about. Welcome to the RetailX podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the RetailX Series podcast. I'm your host, Sapna Shah. Today's episode is all about seed stage fundraising and what it takes, especially in the current environment. Our guest today, Anna Palmer, is a partner at Flybridge Capital, a former operator herself. Anna will talk more about how to be successful at fundraising at the seed stage. Welcome to the podcast, Anna.
Thank you so much for having me.
So excited to have this conversation with you. Let's dive right in. So let's start with a little bit of background. Can you tell us a little bit about you and your background and what you've done prior to VC?
I am a two-time marketplace entrepreneur. I started my first company in high-end clothing donation. And after selling that, then had a second company that was a marketplace connecting amazing women building awesome products to retailers and consumers who then want to shop them. Sold that recently to international market centers. And in between those two, started a venture capital fund in partnership with Flybridge called X Factor Ventures, which focuses on backing pre-seed and seed diverse teams with at least one female founder going after billion-dollar opportunities. We're now on our third fund with that. And then most recently joined Flybridge as a general partner, both still overseeing X Factor, but then also investing out of the general fund.
So tell us a little bit more about Flybridge and your investing activity. I know you have this big focus on community, so I'd like to hear more about that and just in general check size and stage and all of that stuff.
For Flybridge, we invest in some pre-seed, we'll do institutional seed rounds, and then we'll do some opportunistic A rounds. And coming out of that fund, that means our check sizes are usually anywhere between maybe 300,000 on the super early side, all the way to 2.5 or 3 million on the later stage side. One of the things that's really interesting though about Flybridge as a fund is that not only do we have this focus on community-driven businesses, but we actually have funds that drive a community underneath the Flybridge umbrella. And so if you have founders that are listening to this that are pre-seed and you're looking for that very first check, we have one called Community Fund that focuses on backing underrepresented founders. And then we have another fund called X Factor Ventures that focuses on backing diverse teams with at least one female founder. And that is early stage checks. We do 125, 50K into those companies just to get those off the ground.
Amazing. Thank you. Very helpful for context. So right now, as we talk, it's late October. It's a weird time to be fundraising in general. Like you see a lot of news at the later stages, deals aren't happening, but then you see deals that are happening. I don't know what any of that means, but also we're seeing that kind of in early stages, both pre-seed and seed. So can you give your take on what you're seeing right now in terms of the environment, how Flybridge is thinking about the current environment in which to raise?
It's interesting. So we've still seen a number of deals getting done, and we're still seeing a fair amount of volume on the pre-seed and seed stage side. I think one of the things that has changed is those round sizes have shifted. So entrepreneurs are now taking in more capital because they're assuming that it's going to be potentially harder to raise as things go on. And so the average seed round might have moved from taking in maybe $1.5 million or $2 million now with the expectation of raising again in 18 months to now, can we go ahead and raise a $3 to $5 million round and try to shore up that capital as much as you can. And so I think that's been an interesting distinction, but overall the volume of what we're seeing is staying consistent. The other thing I will quickly mention is that the pace of decisions has slowed down, which I think is great for both entrepreneurs and investors, because this is a long-term partnership. And previously in this environment, even though maybe it was easy to meet an entrepreneur on a Monday and have them commit on a Friday, you didn't really get to figure out who they were and how you were going to work together long-term. And so now we're seeing people doing true real diligence. So you might meet an investor and that process may take, rather than 3 days, it now is taking have 3-4 weeks to get all the way through that.
So we're kind of going back to where we were maybe before this last big run up, just in terms of the time that deals are taking to get done.
For sure. And I think that is a benefit to entrepreneurs, that you're entering into a partnership with an investor for the next 7 to 10 years of your life, potentially, and trying to make that decision in a matter of days is just difficult. You just don't know somebody well enough at that point in time. And I think now getting back to some of those fundamentals and really thinking about who is the best fit for the round, how do we mesh as people, who do I want around the table, what skill sets do they have? It gives the entrepreneurs a little bit of time as well to evaluate the investors on the other side.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you alluded to larger round sizes so that founders wouldn't have to raise again for a while. What is that doing, though, to valuations at the seed stage in particular?
We've seen valuations come down a little bit in the seed stage. I think they'll continue to decline over the next 6 to 12 months. So what would have been maybe something at a $15 million pre, we're seeing that going back down to 12 or 8 or even 7, something slightly more reasonable. But it has been surprising to us that those valuations have not dropped as significantly as some of the later stage counterparts.
Yeah, that's interesting, because at pre-seed, and I see mostly things at pre-seed, I am still seeing kind of 8 to 12 is what founders are asking. I tend to see them very early on. And I don't know if the deals are necessarily getting done at those valuations, but pre-seed seems to be like the last to drop, which if seed is coming down, you know, maybe that should be a warning to pre-seed founders.
I think so. And I also say that from an entrepreneur's standpoint, there's a lot of noise around valuation and thinking that your success is tied to how high can you get that valuation number. But in reality, knowing the market conditions and knowing that it's unpredictable what that's going to be like to go out and raise in 12 or 18 months or whenever you're raising that next round, that you want to be really careful that you don't overshoot the goal early to where your valuation is so high that you're risking a down round if the market shifts later on. And so I would caution entrepreneurs to be slightly more conservative on that early number and be purposeful about the amount of capital you take and what that number is. So that way, when you're going out to raise your seed round, it's not that you're having a flat round or a down round solely because market conditions change and someone is no longer willing to pay a 20 million post on a seed round.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And when you're seeing, you were mentioning that you're spending a little bit more time in diligence and getting to know founders. Are you also seeing that the bar for metrics for a seed round are changing?
That's interesting. On the seed stage side, I'd say it's still a little bit more art than science at that point. And so I'm not so sure that the requirement of number of customers or what you have to have from a data perspective has truly shifted. But I think there is just maybe a little bit more of people digging into what you do have, how did you get there, what does that mean for future of the business, taking that maybe a next level of detail down than where we would have been in the last crazy fundraising cycle.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think what I hear very anecdotally from founders is all over the place on this. The metrics have changed, the metrics haven't changed, things are taking longer, the valuations have changed. And then others are saying like, no, none of that hasn't been my experience. It maybe just hasn't shaken out yet.
Yeah, or I would maybe say that there's a little bit more emphasis on finding your true believers now. So before, there was this crazy frenzy that was happening where you didn't want to have FOMO and you're doing this deal and your metrics look good and great, you're putting capital in. And I think now investors are being more purposeful about where they are deploying that capital, even though I think the pace has stayed somewhat the same, slowed down a little bit, but people are still backing companies. I think it's just now you're really looking for those companies that match your thesis. And there's a mix between what happened with the entrepreneur and who they are and what they've done so far on proof points. And also your personal interests and expertise in the space, that now that last component is becoming a little bit more important. So you're not going to do a deal for the sake of doing a deal. You're really doing deals now of things that you truly believe in and match your thesis and, you know, have some interest in.
Yeah, that's actually great. That's great for founders, because then they have people who, to your point, are true believers, but also can potentially be more helpful to them too going forward.
For sure. Yeah. This is all just getting back, I think, to what the foundations of VC was prior to the absurdity of the last 2 years.
Yes, absurdity is a good word. Okay, so switching gears a little bit. So a lot of the RetailX audience is at pre-seed, and we've a little bit talked about this. Now, I think most pre-seed founders are, of course, planning ahead for a seed round. What should they be doing now to plan for a successful seed round in the future, particularly based on this market environment? And I don't think we know how long it lasts, but if you've got a take on that, I'd be happy to hear that as well.
So one of the pieces of advice that I find most helpful is, out of the gate, if you create what you think your seed deck is going to look like. So if you just raised pre-seed, create that deck for aspirationally the next round. And then as you're telling that narrative, you have those slides that are blank, and you then build the experiments to match the data of what you would want to prove in that pitch. And one of the good ways to get there when you're thinking about framing that story is if you ask yourself, if this idea didn't work, then why did it fail? And rank order those things. And if that is, you know, it failed because we couldn't get customers to pay us, it failed because we couldn't get enterprises to ultimately push this out to their employees, whatever those things are, those are going to be the same questions that investors are asking at the seed stage of, can this team truly do this? And what have they done so far to de-risk that? And I think as the environment shifts, and if the environment even continues to decline or it gets harder, the more proof points you can have about those core things in the business, the better. So I would say an example of that, I will use my own personal company as one of these. The marketplace that I referenced, that was a marketplace for women-owned products, we had done a lot of early experimentation around surveys of whether or not people would pay a membership fee to be a part of it. And all that survey data came back positive. That being said, we never asked somebody to put their credit card down. And so when we went out to raise the seed, we had the early data of people tell us that they will do this, but we didn't have that data of people have truly proven that they will put their money behind this commitment. And I think now you probably need the second one and not just the first one, given the environment. And also, that would have made us a much better company had we done that on day one.
That is a great example. And I love this idea of put together your seed deck with these sort of blank pages of what are you trying to prove. I like this idea of thinking ahead instead of scrambling at the moment when you're running out of cash and need to raise another round, which I think happens a lot.
Yeah.
So when we talk about growth, and this, I'm sure this varies based on the kind of company it is, but I get this question a lot from pre-seed founders, which is, what are seed investors expecting from a growth perspective from here, right? You've raised your pre-seed round, you're going out and presumably doing things that help the company grow. What are those expectations?
I think it depends on the company, but the investors are going to be looking for if there's some sort of inflection point. So are you at a place in the company that you've proven enough that if we're writing that check to you, do you know what to do with it? And can that accelerate the company fairly dramatically? And this is maybe one thing that has changed environment-wise, and this goes back to the amount of money that people are raising. The investor expectation of that is now, not only do you have enough capital to accelerate and create that growth curve, but also do you have enough capital to do that in a way that maybe you can ride out for the next 18 to 24 months. And I wish I had a direct answer of X percent, but it's really so dependent on company. If you're a SaaS company, what people are looking for is, can you add clients? Can you convert people from the initial trial products that maybe you sold just to test the idea to truly paying customers? And if you're a consumer company, can you get people to pay you for your product? And will those people tell other people? So it's not, unfortunately, it's not science. It's a little bit more art, like I said, at that seed stage.
And so for each founder, take an average founder who is, whether they're in a SaaS business, a consumer business, a marketplace, whatever it is, what's the best way for that founder at pre-seed to look ahead and say, okay, I've done this, I've taken your advice, I've done this kind of deck, and I think I know where I want to get to. How should they be thinking about talking to firms like Flybridge, talking to VCs like you early on, and making sure maybe that they're on track and looking for the right things as the environment either changes or improves or worsens or whatever it does?
I think there's a lot of advice around relationship building, but I would caveat this with the relationship that you build should not just be a relationship for relationship's sake. So, you know, I've had a fair number of founders that you chat with them once for 20 minutes and then they put you on the email update with a million other investors and you never have a personal relationship with that founder again until they circle back around to raise. That to me is not truly building a relationship. That's more building a transaction. And so I would say rather than going super broad at this point, I would pick, you know, who are the 5 to 10 investors that have shown deep interest in your space based off of what they're tweeting about, what they're writing, other investments that aren't competitive that maybe touch some of the same themes as what you do, what they've done in the past, and reach out to them with quick overview. And then maybe there's one very specific question that you think they would have unique insights on. And then after you have that conversation, continue to build that relationship, but build it in a one-off bespoke way. So if you took their advice, then you execute on that advice and you give them the update as to what happened and really think about it of getting to know the person and not just teeing it up for the next check.
Yeah, I actually really love that advice because like you, I'm on a lot of email lists, some of these update lists, I don't even remember meeting the company, to be honest. So I'm not sure why I'm on the list, or they're not really relevant to anything I invest in. But I think that does feel like the bare minimum that people can do. But I think this idea of narrowing it a little bit and not trying to boil the ocean when you're trying to build these relationships is really helpful.
And I also say from the entrepreneur side, investors can be amazing resources early on as you're thinking about some of the tough things about the business, whether that's core fundamentals of business model or things that they've seen as far as initial clients that you should go after. And so not just building the relationship for the goal that they ultimately write a check, but it truly will make your business better.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So pivoting just a little bit, what are the biggest mistakes you see? I think this relationship building is clearly one of them, like not building relationships, but what are some of the other big mistakes that you see for founders when they are coming in to talk to you about a seed round?
The two biggest mistakes that I've seen are not answering the question of how big or the question of why now. So if you think about it, the seed, what you're trying to convince an investor of, if you're going after venture capital, is that this company ultimately can go public for $3 or $4 billion 7 to 10 years from now. To get there, that means you have to have significant revenues. And you're looking at, can you be creating a company that ultimately is doing 200, 300, 400, 500 million in revenue, sometimes more. And so I think the challenge of that is, it's great if you have an amazing product, but you have to tell the investor what you're creating and then how that ties to this vision of being really big. And so I think that's one of the key places where we see people struggle is, in my head, I'm asking that question. I can get myself there, but it's much easier. And you want to make sure as an entrepreneur, you're controlling that narrative if you tell me the answer to that just out of the gate. So I'd say that. And then the other piece that ties into that answer is the why now component. So chances are there's been 100 other people that have tried the exact same thing that you're trying, but there's been something that has shifted in the market, or you have some unique insight, or there's some external factor that means this is going to succeed at this moment in a way that it previously hadn't. And so tying that to the market trend and saying, look, this market is expanding. So I do a lot in the intersection of climate and commerce. So as an example there, being able to say your resale is now growing and it'll be a $3 trillion market at such and such a date. And we're carving out and getting this slice of this market that's rapidly growing. And that's why now is the moment to build this company. Things like that are what's going to make the difference between an investor digging in and being really interested or looking at it and saying, not quite big enough, or I've already seen four other companies that look exactly like this 3 years ago.
It's interesting that you say that, by how big and why now, because I think those are also very common mistakes at pre-seed. And I think it's because there's not a lot of data very early on. And I think a lot of founders punt on that question, maybe don't include it, but maybe when they're making their seed deck, they should remember that straw man, they should have both of these things clearly in it, and then they won't forget by the time they get to seed.
For sure. And there are different ways that you can get to that answer. So you can look at similar business models to be able to show the how big question. So we're building X for Y. You can look at, as the why now question, you can look at what's happened in adjacent markets and the growth you're seeing there. And so even if you don't have a lot of data, there are still ways, I think, to prove whatever your thesis is.
For sure. Totally agree. Could not agree more. Okay. So those are some of the mistakes. What's the most critical piece of advice you would give founders who are going out to raise a seed round from VCs, which a lot of them at pre-seed will not have a VC on their cap table? So it's generally a new thing for them. What's that most critical thing that they should be doing?
I'm going to answer that two different ways. So I'm going to answer it with the entrepreneur mental health side of this front and center first, because I've been in those shoes and I have had hundreds and hundreds of investor meetings as an entrepreneur. And I think one thing to realize is that what you're trying to do is you're really trying to find the best fit. And this is a matching game of who is going to be the person that helps you build this vision years into the future. And anytime an investor says no, that is actually in no way a rejection of you or the idea or a misbelief. It's really just you're seeing an investor who isn't quite yet the perfect match, true believer. And when you think of it that way, then even though those rejections are hard, I think as an entrepreneur, you want to be just as picky about who you're working with and making sure that person is someone that is gung-ho about what you're building than the investor is on the other side of the table. And so just from a mental health standpoint, know that if you're getting the email that says thanks or not yet, that is not saying that you cannot build this business into a multi-billion dollar company. It just says that you haven't found your forever person yet. So that. And then I'd say the other most critical piece of advice is just remembering that when you're going into an investor pitch, if there's one headline of what you should think about before you have that conversation, it's that you're essentially trying to convince that person how you'll make them money back into the fund. And so what I mean by that, when you're crafting that story, it's that you have the sizzle reel, you get them excited. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to show every single product feature. It's really tied back to that question. So what makes you unique and different? That why now, that big vision? What have you done that shows that your team can actually execute on that? And if you think of that as the guiding header, then I think trying to create interest in the deck and the story, it just becomes a little bit more clear and it makes the investor more likely to say yes, because you're doing some of the work and the job for them.
I love that advice. And I love that we are wrapping this up with a conversation also about mental health, because 100%. So it is so hard. I think starting a company is so hard, and then fundraising is so hard, and it is not personal when you get those no's, for sure.
It definitely is not. And that no doesn't mean forever. I've done this on a couple of occasions where I pass you on that round for some reason or another. And sometimes it's not even just the business or the idea. It might be you're just hitting us at a time where we're working on an annual meeting or fundraising or something that isn't directly tied to your company. And then we continue to talk and end up investing a couple months later when you circle back for that next round.
Yeah, that's a really good point too. I actually was at a investor breakfast. I think it was mostly VCs. I might've been the only angel there, and this is well before COVID, but someone asked, everyone raise your hands if you've passed on something and then gone back and said yes later. And almost everyone in the room raised their hands. So no might not be no forever for sure.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's right.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. Anna, thank you so much for sharing your advice and your tips and demystifying a little bit around seed fundraising. Really appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you for listening to the RetailX podcast. We'll have another new episode out shortly. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about RetailX Series, check out www.retailxseries.com for more information, including recordings of past events. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at RetailX Series. You could also learn more about me, find fundraising resources, or submit a pitch deck at www.redgiraffeadvisors.com. Thanks, and catch you next time.